We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Audacy put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Audacy. Visit ads.audacy.com.
Field Yates is joining us to talk about that and more from ESPN, their NFL insider. Field, you know, it's a huge loss for the Browns with the retirement of Joe Thomas.
It is, guys. And I think that when you see the news of Joe Thomas's retirement, I hope that the first thing that everybody in Cleveland or Browns fans in general are feeling is gratitude.
Sure.
I'm not sure that we have seen sustained dominance at that position in quite some time.
Yeah, I think
basically the moment Joe Thomas got to the NFL, he was the best left tackle in the game, right? I mean,
yep,
a Pro Bowler as a rookie, 10,363 snaps to start. I'm not sure he was ever anything but a really good player. Maybe he wasn't the very best left tackle in the NFL this past season, but he was in the mix. And it's a real testament to the kind of player he was that he could be that good for that long.
What do you do now if you're the Browns? I mean, you're probably gonna draft a rookie quarterback. You just traded for Tyrod Taylor, and you've had that left tackle stalwart for so many years. Now you can't bring a rookie in here and not let him have his blind side protected. You think this Hubbard guy is going to move to left tackle? We're trying to figure out what the heck the Browns can do now. We never thought we've been on the air bull for 8 years. We've never had to worry about left tackle.
That's right.
I was going to say, this is new territory for the Browns, right? And I would say this. The Browns are one of many teams around the NFL that is probably going to go to bed tonight saying, I'm not sure what we're doing at left tackle.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, we just saw Nate Solder sign a 4-year, $62 million deal with the New York Giants, which obviously means the Patriots are now wondering, where do we go? And what do they do? And I think their answer is they're not sure yet. So for the Jets, you have Chris Hubbard, a player who's played some interior offensive line. He's played some right tackle. And there's also Donald Stevenson, who may sound uninspiring, especially because you know he's had some difficult years over the past couple of seasons. I would just caution that, remember, when you sign someone in free agency, you're not signing them for their production. You're signing them for their traits. Mm-hmm. And I think that everybody finds the good in players when they bring them aboard. And Donald Stevenson is an athletic dude. I'm not saying he is the long-term answer. I'm not saying he's a surefire answer at left tackle. But I think he's a guy that they'll at least evaluate because, again, there aren't that many options. And I don't think a player would be in play at pick 4 for a left tackle just based off of how this draft class profiles.
We're talking with Field Yates, ESPN NFL insider. Field, your thoughts on the Browns replacing Isaiah Crowell with Carlos Hyde?
I say, you know, and I don't know the specifics of the money involved for Isaiah Crowell. I haven't seen that yet. I'd say it's probably pretty close, though, to where Carlos Hyde's 3-year reported $15 million deal is. And I think in a vacuum, Hyde's a better player. You know, one thing I know about Hyde that people that have played against him feel is that he's a guy that, and this is going to sound like a cliche, but I've heard people tell me he is one of the most difficult running backs in the NFL to tackle. He's a load. Now, you guys obviously are familiar with him from his playing days at Ohio State. He's a big dude, and I think he really showed an expanded skill set this past year. He had more catches this season than he had targets in any season prior to 2017. So it's been sort of an evolved Carlos Hyde that we've seen over the past 8 or 9 months. I think he's going to make an impact for the Browns offense, whether it's Tyrod Taylor the whole way through as the quarterback or somebody else under center.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. Field. Another move was Jarvis Landry, the trade for Landry, who the Browns acquired on Friday. You think they'll be able to get a long-term deal done with him? Is that something that the Browns are still interested in?
I think so. And I was surprised. I mean, I commend them for this. Really wasn't that much in terms of compensation to send back to Miami. What, a 4th and a 7th round pick? When you've got all this draft capital, you have to utilize it somewhere. And I don't want to say that you know, a seventh round pick can't matter, because obviously there have been some amazing players that have emerged from the seventh round. But I'd rather take the certainty of Jarvis Landry, even if it's for 1 year, than the probably 40% chance that a seventh round player makes your roster. I think they probably will work hard to get a long-term deal done. They, despite all their spending, have plenty of cap space going forward still. And I'm just not sure that Jarvis, like, this is a player who's clamored for a new deal for a long time. I think there's something to be said for peace of mind. He certainly seems enthused by the move to Cleveland. And, you know, it's weird. The one thing that I think is weird is about Jarvis Landry and his release, or his not release, but being traded from Miami, is you hear about how he might not have been good for the culture or whatever down there. And I think to myself, just based off what I can see, and again, you know, pardon the hyperbole, but how many wide receivers seemingly play harder than Jarvis Landry? Like, he blocks as if he is a fullback, not a wide receiver. He plays every single game. He had at least 5 catches in every single game in the last season, the only player to do that in the NFL. He seems like the exact kind of guy you'd want to bring into your roster whose value goes beyond the production, which, oh, by the way, was literally record-setting. 400 catches in his first 4 years, more than any player in NFL history.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a great pickup, and they gave up essentially nothing. Phil Yates, ESPN NFL Insider, is with us. Phil, you mentioned Tyrod Taylor before. We like that move as well. Some people here were concerned that the Browns gave up a third-round pick. We don't care because we think they need stability and leadership at the position. And it also allows them to draft their quarterback at 1, which we assume they'll do, and let him sit if necessary, unless the guy, you know, kills it in training camp and preseason, whatever. First of all, do you like that move? And which quarterback do you think right now the Browns are going to take at 1?
First of all, I just want to state my case here, you know, sort of state my belief,
yeah,
and this hasn't changed, and this was something that I've, you know, sort of felt for a long time here. They're taking a quarterback at 1. I would truly be stunned if the Browns didn't take a quarterback at 1.
Yep.
Despite the moves. And I think just as much of Saquon Barkley as everybody else does, I think he's, you know, the safest prospect in the draft and potentially the best prospect in the draft. At the same time, I just don't think you can possibly justify a running back 1 overall with the quarterback need and the idea that, I get it, there are other players who are going to be drafted after Saquon Barkley who won't be as good as Saquon Barkley, but you know, how many times we need to see Alvin Kamara and Kareem Hunt emerge before we start to realize that it might not be the best business to be taking a running back 5 overall.
Right.
But back to Tyrod Taylor, you know, it's a bridge. It buys you time. And I don't know if, you know, if the Browns take, and I'll answer the last question too. You know, my opinion is that Sam Darnold, I think both of you guys, definitely Dustin would probably say that, you know, Baker Mayfield might be the player they would prefer if they had their own say in the matter. But I think Sam Darnold might be the guy that the Browns end up taking when push comes to shove. I think that if you don't want him to start right away, or even if you do, having a veteran quarterback is a good thing.
Yep.
That's something that it buys you time. And yes, we've seen teams like the Jaguars in 2014 back out on their declaration that they were going to utilize Blake Bortles as nothing more than a backup as a rookie. But, you know, I think if you're the Browns, the last thing you want to do, and it's obviously this franchise has seen it so many times before, is force a guy in there before he needs to be in there. There's something to be said for seeing the game from field level while not being on the field, if that makes sense. So
yeah,
we'll see. I do think, again, it's a quarterback. I have very little doubt about that at 1. And I do think that Sam Darnold probably is the one that, if I had to make a guess with whatever it is, 5 weeks left before the draft, that would be my guess.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Dustin would take Mayfield. I personally would take Rosenfield. I think he's been unfairly maligned. And unless you're worried about the injuries, which I get, I still don't get why he's the best talent of the quarterbacks. But
yeah, and I think there's a case for it. And one thing I'll say, and you know, I feel like I'm venting here because I've heard so much about the idea of Saquon Barkley at 1. And hey, you can take Saquon 1, and then you can take the quarterback that's available 4. But that's operating under the presumption that the Browns value at least 3 of the quarterbacks.
Exactly.
What kind of alternate uniforce is there that the like every team evaluates these players differently. And let's just make this up. Let's just say that one quarterback none of us mentioned.
Yeah.
Let's say that Josh Allen is the guy that they love the most, and they've got him just to use an arbitrary 1 to 10 scale as a 9-level prospect, and the rest of the guys are, you know, 8. Well, if you just sit around there and wait and hope that Josh Allen's there at 4, and then the Giants take him at 2, you've whiffed on the most important position on your roster. So I think the idea that you can take Saquon and just pick the next best available at 4 is complete lunacy. And I think the Browns, again, I mean, maybe I'd be wrong. I will be fine with that if that's the case. But I think at this point, to me, I can't imagine them not taking a quarterback with the first overall pick.
Field, I mean, you use logic, my friend. My God, it's nice to hear somebody use some logic.
We've been screaming about that for weeks.
We saw you on NFL Live the one day when you were going at it with Lewis Riddick.
And you said that exact same thing, and I'm screaming at the TV. I'm like, of course he's right.
Yeah,
that's what I've been saying for weeks.
We were like in church, like praising you, like, yeah, hallelujah. Because people don't really feel that way here, at least some of the callers. They're morons.
Yeah, I understand. I think that sometimes what happens at free agency in the draft is I call it shiny object syndrome, right? Like the thing that you get that like right away. It's like whenever I pull out, I get so excited to get my new iPhone, and then after like a week, I've dropped it. It's got a crack in the screen. The battery's already worse, and I'm like, this was cool for a little while, but I should have known that like eventually its value regresses back down to where it normally is. Like I think that Saquon Barkley is an unbelievable player, but again, like. If you got Carlos Hyde, I like Duke Johnson as a player. There are other running backs, and heck, they could still draft the running back at the top of the second round.
That's right.
If Darius Geis falls there, which he probably won't, but if he did, guys like that could be complete hammerheads for this backfield.
The Browns have just made another free agent signing, not a huge one, but they've signed cornerback T.J. Carey. Well, can you know him, Field?
He's from Ohio.
I do,
University.
Yeah. T.J. Carey played, most recently of the Oakland Raiders.
Right.
And between him and Terrence Mitchell, really what you've done is you've padded some depth in the back end of your secondary. He's a former seventh-round pick, I believe it was, and obviously, as you guys just mentioned, played at University of Ohio. So always good to bring back some familiar faces. Certainly knows the area well. And, he's going to play on special teams, as a punt returner. He can probably play on some core special teams as well. These are the kind of signings that generate like very little heat publicly when they're actually announced. But, the kind of things that, a roster needs to be. And I always say this, and I thought it really shined through during the Philadelphia Eagles run to the Super Bowl. As much as the quarterback matters, it 100% does. And as a matter of fact, it's the most important spot on the roster. But don't overlook the power of 1 to 53. And if you don't have guys that can play, either in multiple phases, on, four downs, guys like T.J. Carey, he may not be your starter every snap, but he could play some defensive back for you and play a lot of special teams for you. Like, you're just not going to make successful strides in the NFL.
Yeah, I remember him because I did some Ohio games when he was playing a few years back, and he's a good, really good player.
And I'm sure the cost won't be prohibitive.
Yeah,
depth.
Yeah, it's just depth. And this field, like when a new GM comes in, they want guys that they want and feel like fit with what they're trying to do. They want tough players. They want to get some of those other guys out, the young players that didn't fit. And we say it all the time, the whole real football player comment to Sashi Brown was a shot, and John Dorsey's turning things over right now.
I wish I could do an hour on the show with you guys to
anytime
you want, man.
So much of the narrative, I really should, is, there's been such a narrative over the past, I guess really since Friday when all the trades went down, about how Sashi Brown did all this work that has either been undone or set John Dorsey up for what he has done over the past week, let's call it. And I think that what's fair is I think you've got one corner of people that are saying that, and they're right. It was tons of draft capital, that came with some pain, obviously. 16 losses in 16 games. A lot of cap space as well, a relatively clean cap. The reality of that is that's not merely a byproduct of angling and planning. Some of it is because you had a talent dearth, and I think the jury is largely still out in a lot of the players that Sashi picked. So I think it's possible that Sashi did a nice job setting up the successor for whoever it was, whether it was John Dorsey or somebody else, to make noted strides this offseason. It's also possible that you may feel as though the new men in charge, which include obviously John Dorsey, Elliot Wolf, you know, and others, are better evaluators of football talent than the previous regime. Like, I think those two things are very, it's very possible for both of those things to be true.
Sure.
So I think if I'm a Browns fan, like, you know, be excited about the overall direction. Like, just be excited about the possibility of, you know, being more competitive because, you know, it was, I can only imagine how difficult of a year it was this past year. So be excited about the possibility. You know, but just making strides. It's not going to be,
absolutely,
you know, 12-4 next year, but if it's 4-12, like, that's a quantum leap.
No doubt. Phil, we appreciate it, man. Thanks for joining us.
All right, guys. Take care. Always appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, it's great to have him on.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.